Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for our panel discussion this morning. It is Tuesday, the 2nd of July, and we welcome you to our program. Hopefully, you've had a lovely day so far, and we don't screw it up. That's all we're going to try to do over the next 90 minutes. Let me introduce our fantastic panel to you, and then we'll get started with the issues on tap here. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Libby Post is with us. She is a political consultant. She is a regular on this program. We are thrilled that she is. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Why, thank you.
Look, it's Mike Spain, a former Times Union Associate Editor. He is here, as always, on a Tuesday. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Caught slightly off guard with the new position you are there at a different seat.
Which chair I'm sitting
in. Yeah, that's right. Yes,
don't
your
let
position
your
always
head.
Remains the same. J.P. Miller is with us. The Empire Reports. J.P. Miller, he is the Empire Report. And good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you.
What was the headline? Oh, AOC was the headline today.
Yes.
Yeah.
The border.
Rocking the border, I believe, was your headline. That's very cool. Rosemary Armeo, mayor. May not be here today. I don't know. She was supposed to be here yesterday, and then she wasn't. And then she said she'd be here today, but I haven't seen her yet. So
sounds like a Law and Order.
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, if it wasn't Rosemary, I would be more I'd be more concerned. Oh, there she is.
Yay!
Oh, you just have to make an entrance.
It's like a that game show.
Yeah, right. That's like oh, look who just. Popped out in. Behind the door number three. Yeah, thank you, Libby.
I was in Niagara Falls.
Yeah, well, good morning.
Yeah.
This
thank
morning.
You.
Back.
Well, this morning.
I've been driving and driving.
Well, she is our own Maid of the Mist, and we welcome Rosemary
so
Armeo.
Cute.
Slowly I turn.
We were trying to recall that routine. I bet you know the whole thing.
During
the
break, Alan Mike. Knows it, don't you?
Step by step.
Inch by inch. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you, sir?
Yo.
Excellent. Well, good morning. And thank you all for being here and, being on time and all that good stuff. Let me get to...
details.
Let's get to... there are so many things to talk about, and I know we should talk about Hong Kong, and I know we should talk about Iran, but my God, I can't get over the 4th of July.
I know.
That's an amazing story.
I just can't get over it, because this is... if you will indulge me for a moment, I would like to start there. The president tweeted yesterday. Now, you'll remember, let's just back up for a second. You'll remember that the president tried to do this for...
Veterans Day.
Veterans Day. Yeah. And he announced it in the spring of last year and said that he wanted to do this for Veterans Day. And everybody said, no, it's not going to work. You just can't do that. The Pentagon got upset. The city got upset. The military got upset. Everybody said, no, it's too expensive. It's silly. And it's just no. No. And he then backed off and said, okay, we won't do it. Well, then, sort of under the radar this whole time, we find out that the president has been planning this 4th of July celebration. I believe it was leaked in February by, I think, the Washington Post, that he was planning a 4th of July celebration on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Which is in itself... disgusting.
Okay. But now we find out through some tweets and through some information that went out on Monday that the Pentagon is going to put military tanks on display on Thursday in Washington as part of the president's plans to turn the annual 4th of July celebration in the nation's capital into a salute to the country's military prowess. Remember, last week, he met with the Russian leader, and he visited North Korea, just saying. The tanks will join an airborne display of the nation's firepower, including a flight of Air Force One over Washington and a performance by the Navy's Blue Angels jets. Mr. Trump, who is to speak at the celebration, has requested that the chiefs for the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines stand next to him as aircraft from each of their services fly overhead and their respective hymns play on loud speakers. I'm going to quote the president. It'll be like no other. It'll be special. And I hope a lot of people come. We have some incredible equipment, military equipment, on display, brand new, very proud of it. Mr. Trump's 4th of July homage.
You missed the best part of more of his tweet, which was major fireworks display, entertainment, and an address by your favorite president, me. Exclamation point.
That happened.
I mean,
well, there's a parallel event going on, right?
Well, there's so yeah, there's right. Well, that's
the usual one that Carole King's going to be singing at.
Right. That there's the one that a Capitol 4th.
Right.
And so now those two are sort of being glommed together, and the performers at those performances are saying, "We don't want to be part of a Trump rally. We just were going to go celebrate the 4th of July, like the 4th of July has been celebrated for decades and decades." In the nation's capital. So Pentagon officials have long been reluctant to parade tanks, missiles, and other weapons through the nation's capital, like the authoritarian leaders of the North Korea and China, writes the New York Times. They say the United States, which has the world's most powerful military and spends more on defense than the seven next largest military spenders combined, does not need to broadcast its strength. But Mr. Trump believes that the inclusion of tanks and other weapons, which was first reported by the Washington Post, would help to transform this capital city's annual event into the kind of military celebration that he has long wanted. This after he watched the Bastille Day parade in Paris in 2017. So the original event had a price tag of $90 million, which was one of the reasons that it went down in flames the first time. I do want to say just one more thing before I turn this over to the panel here. In this New York Times reporting, Mr. Trump said that brand new Abrams tanks and brand new Sherman tanks would be on display
from World War II
on Thursday.
The ones we never used.
The M1 Abrams tank was used during the Persian Gulf War of 91 and is still currently in use by the military. The M4 Sherman was used by the U.S. during the World War II and the Korean War and is no longer in active service. The president acknowledged that you have to be pretty careful with the tanks because the roads have a tendency not to carry heavy tanks. So we have to put them in certain areas. The president did not say where those areas would be. Okay, and now I'm just going to read this one paragraph and then I'll turn it over to you. Pentagon officials declined to comment on Monday as they wrestled with how to accommodate the president's tank request only a few days before the event. Among the logistical concerns was how to transport tanks that weigh more than 60 tons into a popular downtown area where tourists gather to see the monuments. Moving and guarding the tanks would require staffing at a time when many troops are at home for the holiday. Another problem, and this seems like a big problem, is that Arlington Memorial Bridge, which spans the Potomac River and connects Arlington National Cemetery and the Lincoln Memorial, might not be able to hold the weight of a tank. Also, the closest tank seems to be about 350 miles away, and they're not sure how they're going to get the tank to Washington, D.C.
On such short notice.
Who would like to start?
I think you covered it all.
I'm not sure there's anything to add after
that. What do you say?
I found myself this morning wondering whether it was proper to wish that the bridge fell down. I don't want anybody to get hurt. Yeah, I don't want anybody to get hurt, except maybe Trump. But that would be wrong. But is that what it would take to make people? This is the same president who was engineering the loss of all the scientists in the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. This is the same president who was engineering a climate control policy that doesn't acknowledge climate control, and now he's running a parade.
This is the same president who's engineering a think tank out of the State Department to look at human rights through the notion of natural law, which is the Bible, which means people like me should be on an island somewhere if we get to live.
We're going to put you there in
a tank. Well, the interesting thing is he doesn't like a lot of details, and he lets other people handle all these important things like global warming and
that's being a good executive.
Scientists, et cetera.
All is important.
But he's
yes, right.
But Alan, he was saying. I mean, they're saying that he's very, very interested in every detail of this. He's really managing this himself. This is something that he really cares about.
And Mike, oh, the crowd size.
Oh.
You already know it's going to be the biggest event.
It's all about
it'll be bigger than his inauguration.
It's all about
which was already
size.
The biggest.
Yeah, go
it's
ahead.
It's all about size.
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, first of all, the Sherman tanks, it's interesting because while they're very famous, they were not our best asset in the Second World War.
Right.
The Nazis had better tanks.
That's a good point.
It's that simple.
Oh, details, details.
Yeah, details, details. But also, it really does have very little to do with the actual parade. Once again, it is a signal to the base that I'm a militarist. I may not have gone into the army, and I may not have, but I'm really gung-ho military, and I know you are too, and I'm sending you a little bouquet. I think that's what it is.
And even if you, and I don't disagree with a word you just said, but even if you back off that and make it a little more simplistic, it's basically a rally, right? I mean, it's hard not to see it as a political rally.
With tickets given out by the RNC.
For the first however many rows, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how unusual that is. I mean, to be fair, you know, to say this is outrageous that a sitting president is hijacking a public event to promote his own candidacy. I mean, it has happened before.
But not with this.
When?
Not with the July 4th.
I think every president giving a speech who's seeking re-election uses that. Any official act becomes
on the steps of Lincoln Memorial.
Right.
If you go to
West Point or to Annapolis to give a speech,
sure,
I think Mike
sure.
makes a point.
Sorry,
yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have the same symbolism.
It's hard to separate it, but what's going on here is he's gotten companies to donate fireworks, so that's going to be $750,000 fireworks display.
Yeah.
So that will be the biggest because
that's
usually it's
cool,
about a
actually.
Third.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay,
I'd
sort
like
of am into that part.
We may
of it.
Be able to see it from here.
He's already got you guys.
Every
you guys
dog
are already into it.
Every dog in a 75-mile radius is going to be hiding under the bed, as well as all the PTSD.
We all have our filters, so. And that's yours.
Yes.
And by the way, I buried this in the lead. I apologize, but John Stamos is going to be hosting because,
from Full House.
Yes, because Lori Loughlin was busy.
When I read this last night, I read headlines for a living all day. I probably read 150 headlines a day. This made me laugh longer and harder about the tanks than any headline in the last 6 months.
I agree with you. It's why I gravitated to the story. However, it really isn't funny.
It's crazy. I think that it's got to be that he goes around to other countries, and when he arrives, they trot out all their tanks and their missiles and their planes, and he says, why are we not doing this in America? This is spectacular.
Why are we not doing this for me?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And I got to say, JP, it's a brilliant analysis because it involves a lot more than just that. It is the symbolism of a strong man. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Think about where he has gone, where he admires all that stuff. That is strong man stuff.
And the other thing, I think we need to look at the symbolism of him being at the Lincoln Memorial. Here's Lincoln, the man who freed the slaves, juxtaposed to Trump, the man who was enslaving children in concentration camps.
Oh, that was a good one.
Oh, wow.
That was true.
I just want to, one more quote from
Newt
Gingrich.
Newt likes the idea.
What kind of idiot do you have to be to complain that the president wants to celebrate the founding of our country, other than the fact that they have to pay to fix the streets? Who cares?
Right.
Raise
right.
my hand.
Yeah.
So
you
get big idiot. I'm an idiot. I do care about this. I think it's really,
it's
really
insane.
So it's like paying for all his trips to the golf
courses. It
probably
will break a lot of pavement. It could break some of the pipes beneath the streets. That's the reason that they didn't want the
Veterans Day Congress, parade. And then Congress cuts off aid to D.C. So it's a great juxtaposition.
But knowing what we know, what we're reading, do you think that tanks will actually roll on the 4th of July?
Do you
think this is just a big him having fun with the media?
There may be one tank.
As I said before, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
He said
because symbolically, he has made a statement.
Yeah, I think you're right, Alan.
I'm reading something. At least two tanks have reportedly arrived in Washington, D.C. days after President Trump called for Independence Day celebration. M1 A1 tanks are alongside four other military vehicles, the AP reported. I just can't believe that they're actually going to roll tanks through Washington, D.C.
No, I think they'll have some smaller tanks on display. That's my speculation.
I'm wondering if there will be a because there are two different events that are kind of getting squished together, if those who are participating in the first event, Carol King, Elmo.
I think Grover will also be there.
Do they back out and say, all right, look, I don't want to be – I mean, Carol King has already tweeted and said, look, I'm not in for a Trump rally. I'm here for the Capitol. So you wonder whether they will back out.
Could Elmo drive the tank?
Yeah, but does anybody else
Jane
think
–
does anybody else think that there might be some symbolic stuff here about rolling tanks through Washington, D.C.?
Yes, of course there is.
Of course there is, yeah.
I mean, that's the frightening part about it. Right. And
he's such a showman. This is the P.T. Barnum of politics.
It's not only show, it's scary. I mean, the idea. We hear from people daily, right? Every day, Rosemary. We hear from people who say he's not going to leave, even if he's not elected.
Yeah,
he's not going to leave.
Right,
he's going to mobilize the army. He's going to. That's the question.
Our friends in the media, Washingtonian Magazine, has offered some suggestions in an article titled Avoid Trump's Fireworks This 4th of July and Celebrate in These Small Towns Instead. Among the options, it offered marching bands, pie-eating contests, and Winnie roasts in a half dozen cities just outside of Washington, D.C. No tanks, but you had me at Weenie Rose. So.
Pie did it for me.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about this and other stuff. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 2nd of July. And we welcome you to the program, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. I have a few in front of me. John says, I suggest that the Pentagon, the Joint Chiefs, etc., follow Nancy Reagan's advice, just say no. Chalk up one more wonderful thing Trump has ruined for us. There's always Canada Day. He can't touch that. My flag will be flown upside down tomorrow, a symbol of distress. I urge others to do the same. Ricky says this president doesn't act like he is our employee. John has an idea for a protest. He says someone needs to organize a group of people to show up near this quote-unquote celebration and blast the recordings of the crying babies imprisoned at the border.
Ooh. Not a bad idea.
I think this is an appropriate response to Trumpolini's parade to himself.
Trumpolini.
Gina says, and the RNC is in charge of handing out the tickets. Sickening. It's a Trump rally and we're paying for it. Welcome back to Rosemary. She's our own firepower. And then another John says, I can think of no better way to illustrate our need to focus on infrastructure than our inability to move a tank.
You know, it's the problem is that everybody's paying attention to him. And they're giving him the headlines.
And
I know that he's the president. What else?
Yeah, but Alan's a very good point, though. And the alternative is what?
I
you
know.
Just ignore this?
I know.
I'm worried about the scientists at the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Me too.
We are going to lose 4/5 of them. And these are scientists who have done remarkable work and continue to do remarkable work on food production and
food safety.
Food safety and on climate change. And these are the leading problems of the whole world. And we are letting them go because Trump doesn't want climate change to be considered real. It's terrifying.
Well, the reason it's so terrifying to me is the instability of the president. When you take a look at the fact that he has grandchildren, does he care about these little faces? Does he care at all about that? Or is it all about his temporary need for whatever political benefits he can get? It's unbelievable.
And he's moving the agriculture department from Washington to Kansas City.
You know, that's kind of unclear because there's no building for which these people are aiming. You know, they were told you have a week. I think they have until July 15th to decide whether to lose their jobs or to move to Kansas City. But where in Kansas City? I mean, if you have children, you need to get them into a school district. You have families to move. And this is a two-week decision. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, why four fish want to leave.
Is there anybody reporting about what brought this about, other than wanting to destroy the infrastructure?
Apparently, I mean, I don't – there was a report in Politico, and then I'll let Rosemary jump in here, but there was a report in Politico in mid-June that said that the Trump administration had refused to publicize dozens of government-funded studies that carry warnings about the effects of climate change, defying a long-standing practice of touting such findings by the Ag Department's acclaimed in-house scientists. The studies range from a groundbreaking discovery that rice loses vitamins in a carbon-rich environment, a potentially serious health concern for the 600 million people worldwide whose diet consists mostly of rice, to a finding that climate change could exacerbate allergy seasons, to a warning to farmers about the reduction in quality of grasses important for raising cattle. So these reports apparently, and the distress over these reports, said, well, it makes it easier if you don't have those people making those reports.
Right. And people won't get upset.
The spin from the administration is, well, we just want the department to be closer to the farmers. Yeah. So it makes sense to
You know, Rachel Maddow made a point last night that these are not just scientists. These are not run-of-the-mill. These are the same group that helped Dr. Fleming make penicillin, turned it from, you know, a mold that he found on a plate in his lab into a medicine that saved millions of people. That's the impact of these scientists that he's now saying, no, either leave or move to this mythical place we're going to set up for you in Kansas City.
The other thing the Department of Agriculture has done, and for those of us in my business, this is important. They've taken all the reports down of the inspections of puppy mills across the country.
Uh-huh.
And when you do, you can do a FOIL and get it, but it's all redacted. So you don't know who you're looking at and what they're...
Now, what's the advantage, Libby? Why would they want to suppress such information?
So that puppy mills can breed animals
without
regard.
It's a multi-million dollar business.
Yeah, it's a multi-billion dollar. It's a $76 billion
business. So he's taking money from the puppy torturers.
Well, no, probably. But, you know, there are a dozen... really big, maybe facilities in the Midwest, and they supply pet stores with puppies that are sick, that have genetic problems, that come here and people buy them, and then they come home and the puppy's got parvo, and the family has to shell out, you know, thousands of dollars. You know, so what they're doing on climate change is horrible. What they're doing on other stuff about animal safety is just as bad.
You don't even know about it.
And he does have grandchildren, and isn't he concerned about what they're going to eat?
I don't think he has to. He's rich, and that's the whole thing. This is about elite and poor people. And
sadly, that's true. His grandchildren can move to higher ground. His grandchildren can buy the food when it's limited because they can pay the price, or their parents can pay the prices. And that disconnects him from reality. And I think that must be what's going on. He just does not have an understanding of what it is like to live in America. He has what it's like to live in Manhattan in a tower.
I mean, we go back and forth on this panel a lot. And Alan, I'm interested in your thoughts here. But the fact that you have, you know, people say, oh, he's a moron, doesn't know. But this is crazy genius, right? I mean, this is to be able to, you have your plate spinning over here. We're going to have tanks run down along the Potomac in Washington, and everybody pays attention to that. And meanwhile, this very serious, horrible thing is being done in the Agriculture Department, which had to have been thought out and planned.
But not by him, but by the people who work for him.
Sonny Perdue.
Because he's Sonny, got, right,
yeah,
right.
Well, they're his employees. I mean, he's obviously set the agenda and the tone.
But they've
right?
got their hand up his back. He's their puppet.
I just wanted to respond to Joe's sense on this thing. I don't think he does think three steps in advance. I think he thinks in terms of, this is my shtick. Mm-hmm. This is what my people like the fact that I'm unpredictable and that I'll say all kinds of stuff. And even if I get in the way of the people, you know, who are in the military or other things, I'll just do it because that's what my brand is.
But that's the public stuff. Important. But yeah. Then meanwhile, privately, you're doing all the stuff with the agriculture department, which is really damaging.
Absolutely. Which is, let's get rid of government. Right. Let's get rid of all of the controls that we have. And we see it in education. We see it in agriculture. We see it everywhere else. And that's what's so disturbing. I mean, really disturbing. Forget about disgusting, but disturbing about the fact that we have, because enough people didn't love Hillary and some of the things that they thought she stood for and they wanted out and they thought they'd get something a little different, they end up getting this guy who is really out of control, and many psychiatrists and others think is really mentally damaged.
Yes, he is. He's a narcissist.
Mike's shaking his head.
No, I can't disagree with you, Alan. I think you very well summed up why he ended up where he ended up. A lot of people took a chance because they were frustrated with the way things were. Yeah. I think there was another separate group of people who just have the burn the house down approach. You know, whatever Trump is doing is good because Washington is all bad and he's sort of burning the house down, starting with the agriculture department. And that's positive because it'll mean we'll have to replace it with something leaner and more practical that won't cost me a lot in taxes.
And may I just add to that, and you're not going to like it, but I've heard from people, my friends on the left, who say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, let's burn the house down. That's the way to get it better. Boy, are they learning something. And you know what? Most of those people who said that to me have enough. You're talking about Trump having enough and his kids having enough to get by. Most of the people who said that to me have enough to get by.
So what's the rationale for it then on those parts?
Their rationale is, and by the way, you know, the older you get, the more you remember things. We saw.
No, you don't. There's the opposite, Alan. Well, the more you remember, the more you forget everything.
Well, okay, I'm gonna give you an example, Rosemary, because you make, as always, a good point. But I remember back in the old days, some of the people on the Uber left used to say the same things in the marches and everything else. Burn it all down. Take it all down, and then we'll start all over again. Well, wrong.
Okay, so CNN is reporting now, it was just pointed out to me, that tanks will not be a part of a 4th of July parade in Washington. The Pentagon armored vehicles will be on static display.
Who called that one, sir?
I did. No. The president did. I created this situation, and now I recognize that, you know, that Washington is too weak. And so we're not going to have them in the streets.
And so what's the political cost to the guy for having changed his mind? Zero. That's what's so fascinating about this.
By the way, and far be it from me to be a cynic, but isn't a static display of military
armament?
Military vehicles and weapons. I don't know, called the Smithsonian?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what that is?
Well, also, Joe, you got to get them there. You know, we had a long discussion about going over those bridges. If you got to put the tank, let's say it's static, you still got to put the tank.
Well, I don't think
they're across the bridge.
I think they're just doing this
vehicle.
Yeah, they're not saying tanks. Yeah. They're just saying armored vehicles, and I think they're just going to go for the ones that are already there.
You know, it could be a really big 3D model. You never know.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain. Oh, you're the one. you were the one exhaling. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I thought a balloon was in here.
well, sort of, kind of.
Alan, I thought you were getting ready for the parade. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. Rosemary Mayo and Libby Post.
Yeah,
good morning. No, I was going for more breath. Okay, so yesterday we were talking about this, and we didn't have a lot of a lot of information, but yesterday some numbers came out. We were asking the question of who won the Democratic debates and what were the polls saying. And so now there are polls out that show a variety of things. For one, Senators Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren gained substantial ground after last week's Democratic presidential debates. Former Vice President Joe Biden and former Representative Beto O'Rourke declined. Biden still leads the field, but has a much shakier position. Harris, at least for now, has moved into rough parity with Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Warren, the Massachusetts senator, according to the post-debate surveys, which have begun providing data of how the debate affected the field of Democratic hopefuls. Harris from California jumped from 8% support nationwide before the debates to 17% afterward. That according to 538.com. By contrast, Biden dropped 39 to 31. Overall support for the other candidates did not shift significantly, although several, including Warren, Booker, Castro, saw significant jumps in the number of Democrats who view them as favorably. A CNN poll showed a tighter race, with Harris and Warren each picking up support and Biden dropping to only a narrow lead. Perhaps as ominously for Biden, a third poll for Huffington Post found that the shape of Democratic voters who see him as capable of winning the general election dropped significantly.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with the fact that everybody knew who Biden was. He had been the vice president of the United States. A lot of people, including me, really thought he was a fine gentleman. But the fact of the matter is they didn't know the others. Now you see Harris, and she did a brilliant job. She's been doing a brilliant job. And if I'm any example, I thought Biden was the one. Now I'm not so sure. Now I think, you know, Harris may well be the right person. I live in Massachusetts, so I don't dare cast any aspersions on Elizabeth Warren, but she will, of course, share that woman designation that is so important and so many people are talking about right now. The real question is, which of them can present a better image in terms of political character, the ability to sway the masses?
I'm sorry. I would like to take advantage of that woman designation that is so important and speak next, Alan. my dream would be for a Harris-Warren ticket to kick the butt out of Donald Trump. That would be lovely revenge for Hillary. But I am a Biden supporter. I have liked him mm-hmm. for years. I covered him as a Cub reporter, and I thought he was great, but he's making the same mistakes over and over again. He does not listen to the people who are trying to help him.
Which is
be ready for the attack by Kamala Harris. That was no surprise. Pete Buttigieg was totally ready for attacks against him about killings, police killings of blacks. And why was he not ready for a warm and possible answer to her, which is, I'm sorry that you were hurt. And I understand that busing was extremely difficult at the time. Blah, blah, blah. Go from there. Instead, he had that tight-lipped, you're wrong, I was right, you mischaracterized me. He could not have done it worse. And that means he did not listen to his staff, who I'm sure are smart enough and care about his campaign enough to have told him otherwise. And that's what makes him, to me, dangerous as a candidate. If he can't follow it in a campaign, how's he going to do it as a governor?
Well, yeah, you're right about one thing, and that is it does appear that whatever it was, his devils in the past attempts to become president have not changed.
Right.
In other words, he's
right.
the same guy.
Right.
And I'm very upset about that, to be honest with you, because to me, personally, the number one issue is getting rid of this president.
Right.
What I saw from Harris, by the way, was really first rate. I haven't seen
it's
that.
Awesome.
I haven't seen that from Warren. What I see from Warren are wonderful and really important ideas about how to change policy. That makes a great deal of difference to me. But in terms of swaying people, as Rex Smith always says, "Golly gee whiz, Martha!" You know, right. Look at that. That's really what Harris is showing me.
The two things that I think can be taken in different ways. The other thing to take out of this poll of two people that we haven't really mentioned: one, Bernie Sanders; the other, Pete Buttigieg. Neither one of those candidates moved as a result of this, although one. Sanders seems to be in decline, where as far as Buttigieg, at least on the money front,
yes, he raised
$26 million. Doing very, yes. very well. Now, we know from Jeb Bush that money doesn't always mean that you're going to do well in a primary system. However, it doesn't hurt, right?
Libby, I particularly want to ask you this. Do you think, look, Buttigieg is gay, right? And therefore...
Yes, dear.
I'm just thinking in terms of identity politics.
Yep.
That there's a lot of money that is interested mm-hmm. in seeing him get ahead. What do you think?
Oh, I definitely think that. I mean, the Victory Fund endorsed him this past weekend. They are the LGBT Political Action Committee nationally, and their endorsement means a lot to people. I think that you're seeing the gay community, the gay men's community in particular, coalescing behind him. I think we all recognize that his road to the White House is not going to be an easy one, and he might not even get there this time around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's positioning him and the gay community, the LGBTQ community, to have more of a seat at the table, more of the ability to impact policy. And what goes hand in hand with this is, you know, from my perspective, now you've got Pete on the rise, you've got him getting national attention, and you have Alfonso David, who just left the governor's office. He was his longtime counsel, he's a gay man, becoming the head of the Human Rights Campaign. And so you have two new players on the block, and it's going to be very interesting to see just exactly how well the gay community fares in all of this. Plus, you've got the Supreme Court.
I don't understand. Do you mean they're going to work against each other?
No. I think it's about the increase of invisibility and the increase in power.
I see.
Okay, that will have a place at the table. We can no longer be denied a place at the table with Pete Buttigieg doing as well as he does. And as I said before, these debates, these people are running for cabinet.
Right. Other federal positions.
Right. Yeah.
But I think one of the appeals of Buttigieg has been that you don't automatically think, he's the gay guy.
Right.
Not everybody does.
No.
They look at him as a young, bright, brilliant Rhodes Scholar, mayor, who's
a veteran,
nine languages,
happens to be gay. Yeah. I mean, I think that will
at great risk, personally, I think that we somehow downplay the power of identity politics. You're absolutely right. For most people, he happens to be gay. But there's a substantial number of people in this country who think this is a good time for us. Look, we know that the black community turned out in huge numbers for Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. There was a reason for that, you know. So I'm just questioning the panel. I think it's an important question, although it will bring some negative response, I'm sure.
I think that those people who are thinking the way you say, Alan, are not voting Democrat anyway. They're Trump supporters.
Well, I'm sorry. Who's that? No. What do you mean?
I think that if you're going to vote against him because he's gay and
you
don't
want
gay
people. No, I think you say voting
for him.
Oh, you mean
no,
people.
I think identity politics. I mean, I know some people poo-poo it and say it's a bad thing, but you know what? The gay community wouldn't get as far as it has gotten if it wasn't for identity politics.
That's right.
And the same thing can be said for all the other marginalized communities if it wasn't for identity politics and standing up and being heard.
But even if you had 100% of the gay community coming out for Buttigieg, even if you had 100% of the African American population coming out for a black, do you have enough?
Well, I don't know. It's one out of 10. If Libby, who has given us some stats on this, is correct that it's 1 out of 10 people in the United States are gay, then you better believe that's enough of a margin to win an election.
And,
sure.
And all their parents.
Well, when I look at Buttigieg, I see him as not just the youngest candidate and maybe the most telegenic, but I see a moderate alternative for that 22 or 25% that are still with Biden. I think that Biden may have given his best debate performance then. I think it could get worse and worse and worse. And so that 22 to 25% of Biden supporters could easily go to Buttigieg. Mm. He's from the Midwest. He's moderate. And he's, I think, would be a good alternative for Biden supporters.
And he's also talking to Christians who are disgusted by the radical Christian right, or what I now call the American Taliban. Mm-hmm. They are disgusted by how they've hijacked morality, mm-hmm. and on one hand, you know, they're pro-life, but they want these kids locked up.
Let me shift here for a second. So if identity politics, and I think this is a very important discussion that we're having right now, really important, because I think it is largely ignored for all kinds of political and other kinds of reasons. Do you think that who becomes the beneficiary, for example, of the black vote? Is that Harris? It certainly doesn't look like it's Booker right now, right?
And Biden has tremendous tremendous African American. I don't think they've decided yet. I think it's too early.
Yeah,
it's not Obama. Everybody plainly was gonna in that community would plainly be. I don't think we're there yet.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters from the discussions that we've had so far, and then we'll move on to some other topics as well. Ray Graff with news after this short break. Well, when you have good spirited discussion, you get a lot of good letters. So we'll go in that direction next. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and don't yawn yet. And Libby Post. Good morning. Yeah. Good morning, all.
And Joe, CNN is now reporting that Buttigieg has we were talking about identity politics, zero following among African Americans, approval.
Doubt.
So that's interesting when you get two different groups who become passionate one way or the other.
Well, and it's been, and he's had that problem since before this recent.
Are there any black people in Indiana?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know better than that,
Gary?
Rosemary.
Gary, near South Bend.
That's true.
That's not his. That's not South Bend.
No, he's South Bend.
But there's people
calling
South Bend.
I don't know. I would have to check the demographics.
I think the electorate is more.
Mike, get me out of this.
People of color than it is white.
Frank Broody wrote a piece Sunday in the New York Times that talked about a dream ticket of Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg.
I
didn't mean that to be, you know, snide or anything. I'm asking, in the past, would he have had any occasion to have been working with or for the black community other than the police incidents?
I could be quoting incorrectly from the debate, but I think I remember someone saying to Mayor Pete that 26% of his community was African American, yet
right,
only 6% of the police force was African American. So right, for that sounds to me like a relatively significant.
He failed, and he definitely has failed. He admitted himself in that area.
Yeah. Okay. Didn't get it done.
All right, lots of letters. Let's go to them. We go to Tom, who says the display of military might being discussed brings back too many scary memories of Cold War photographs. This particular display is especially ludicrous. We will be bragging that we have given a match to a child who lives in a tinderbox. We will be celebrating a president who literally rips children out of the arms of their parents. The child in me wants the rest of the world to publicly laugh at us and our misguided display. Gary says, and why are we militarizing Independence Day at all? It's about brave men with a lot at stake who publicly seceded from the world superpower, risking their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. Where are they in Trump's extravaganza? Steve says, did the children get their baths, their clean clothes, their food? He may get what he wants, but when will they get what they need? We got this letter from Linda, who says the women's group Code Pink has obtained a permit to fly the Trump baby balloon near the Lincoln Memorial on the 4th. That's much more entertaining than some boring old tanks. Richard says France and Russia are two nations that go big on military parades. They're also two nations that were invaded and occupied for years by the German enemies in World War I and Nazis in World War II. Millions of people in those countries died, sent to camps, or forced to swear allegiance to the enemy invaders. No wonder they have military parades. What's Trump's justification for his parade.
I love letters like that. They have a historical perspective, and it's good to hear it.
Diane says, love this program. Regarding Trump and his grandiose plans to spend millions of dollars for the purpose of bringing attention to himself on the 4th is grotesque. While refugees at the border are dying, sleeping on cement, drinking out of toilets, etc., Donald Trump has no problem throwing millions away on nonsense. This is disgusting. This needs to be stopped and not allowed. We got this from Lee, who says, I find it disturbing that the streets around Washington are not as robust as those surrounding Tiananmen Square. Matt says, as reprehensible as the conditions are for migrant children, can you please stop this concentration camp nonsense? America is not Nazi Germany, and it's an insult to Holocaust survivors to compare the two.
It is not an insult to Holocaust survivors who, since they went through the experience themselves, vowed it would never happen again. And it is happening, and we need to call them concentration camps and call attention to what's happening to honor them.
Anybody else on that? No?
Well, is it exactly the same as a concentration camp? Of course it's not. The intention of a concentration camp was to incinerate.
Those are death camps. There's a difference between concentration camps and death camps.
You mean the detention camps that were all through Europe.
They are concentration camps. The same.
Just like what we did to the Japanese?
Yeah,
here
internment camps, you know, we call them.
Well, they were work camps too.
Wait a second. Yeah. The Japanese were American citizens.
Yes, right, and put into camps.
Yeah,
American citizens.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. It was a disgraceful part. Korematsu and the rest of it. It was a disgraceful part of American history. There's no way around it. Now, while what we've done with people who are wanting to get into this country is disgraceful. It is disgraceful because we have laws and we're not following those laws. It ain't the same thing, is my point.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not.
You're right. Citizens get special privileges, and this is all an attempt to make sure that no one is allowed to get those privileges, not even to legally ask for them under asylum.
Well, I agree with that.
And the Jews were ripped of their privileges. They were ripped of their citizenship.
As were the Japanese.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, there's different definitions for these various camps. They were internment camps for the Japanese. The U.S. government didn't make them work in factories to support the war mission.
That's right.
You know, that's a difference.
But
and
on the other hand,
concentration camps and death camps, a lot of people think of that as one thing.
I get that, but you know what? The messaging here, for us to call it a detention center, doesn't sound as bad as when you call it what it is, which is...
It's all about euphemisms,
right,
Libby.
It's
not a cage, it's a detention facility.
Right.
It is a
concentration camp, and it's from somebody who's lost a lot of family in the war.
Right.
You know? I get it if there are some people who are insulted by this, but I think Holocaust survivors, they understand. The few that are left, they understand what it's like to be in a cage. Mm-hmm. They understand what it's like to be in a train, you know, piled up on top of one another, being driven to your death. And don't tell me that there aren't people dying in these camps. We know that children are dying, trans people are dying because they're not getting health care. People are dying there. And, you know, it's a disgrace, and it's a black mark
and
on
people who are speaking out against it are being fired, like the editorial writer who did the cartoon.
Which was a great cartoon. I thought it was a perfect cartoon.
Alan, you got a clip there. What did you want to say?
No. I think that as long as we remember that there are distinctions between these various places, certainly the Holocaust was the worst thing that we have seen historically. We know 6 million people died as a result of being in those camps, and that the purpose of those camps was to kill them. Trump has different ideas about why he is doing this. And they are disgraceful, too, because we have laws in this country which allow for people to apply to come to this country. And he is making sure that that isn't being done. And one of the methodologies for that are the camps. No two ways about it. So if you want to call them concentration camps, okay. But let's remember that there's a difference between what happened in the Holocaust and what's happening here, although neither is a good thing.
Let's go back to letters. Joanne says, good morning, Roundtable. I'm an expat of Massachusetts living in Australia, where Labour, the party on the left, just lost a national election that the polls said they would win comfortably. It reminded me of Brexit and the 2016 U.S. election and was a tragic blow for climate initiatives and immigration policies in yet another country. So I think we have to be careful reading the polls. I think the other takeaway from that letter is we also have to understand that our troubles are extrapolated around the world as
That's right. What is the trend? Why is this trend happening? And it does seem to be worldwide that everybody is saying, I got mine, close down the doors, I don't want anybody else in here.
Right. And that's a little more, even more scary. Here's one for you, Alan. I love you all, especially Alan. But I'm not. It's not so bad.
But
Interested in why you would switch your position from Biden to Harris based on polls in one debate. We all knew Biden, yes, but everyone knows Harris. She is already in a senator, so we all know what she stands for. One debate doesn't change a thing.
Okay, so thank you very much for the compliment. However, I want to be very honest with you. I watched what she said, and I watched the way she said it. And I'm interested in defeating Donald Trump as president of the United States. And I think she showed me something I had not been aware of. I'm so sorry that you were, but that I wasn't. But I think I'm more representative of the American people because those numbers are going up like crazy right now.
Well,
her numbers are so. I learned something. So sorry.
What I think you're going to see, though, is if, in fact, Senator Harris becomes the front runner, you're going to see the arrows pointed at her from the other challengers.
Well, sure.
And we will see how she does under that fire. And I think that we could see two or three different front runners over the coming months. And I'm excited to see people flinging arrows at someone other than Biden.
You know what? It's all how you play the game. So this morning, you know, I get up in the middle of the night, maybe 2:30, and start reading the papers. There was an extraordinary piece on Harris's husband. Now, here you have a woman who is running for president of the United States, as she certainly should. But they know that there are going to be people who vote against her because she is a wife, as opposed, and she shouldn't be there. Now, we all know that that's ridiculous. Nevertheless, there are people who vote that way. So the Harris people are doing a terrific job of bringing him forth, telling what he is, how supportive he is, and what he means to that marriage. And I think that's kudos for Harris's people for doing it that way.
Well, I was going to ask you what you thought of Eric Smallwell, who I don't think has a chance, but I thought he had like this great a presentation when he said to Biden, pass the torch and played his own.
Mm-hmm. That was excellent.
Wasn't that? And he kind of took away from Buttigieg, who's trying to be I'm the millennial candidate.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he has a future.
I think they all have a future.
Good point,
well,
maybe.
Marianne, I'm not so sure.
Yeah,
about.
No, she. I don't consider her really.
She may be selling more books.
Yes,
she was highly entertaining.
We have
until
a lot
I find out she's an anti-vaxxer.
We have a lot of letters about that. We were. Are being mean to her and dismissive of her.
She's an anti-vaxxer. I don't apologize. Yeah, that's okay, what changed my mind. Yeah.
She was the most Googled candidate during the debate.
Because she was interesting she was really fascinating in the debate, I have to say.
In an Admiral Stockdale way.
Exactly.
I would like to answer. I would like to answer all of that.
Okay.
I would like to answer all of that by just simply saying Donald Trump is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying here? In other words,
yes.
Point made.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's a really good point. All right, so a couple more letters and then we'll move on. I want to get to a couple of other things here. Identity politics. If I had a dollar for every time I yelled "Amen, Libby" at my radio, you wouldn't need a fund drive. Her comments on the need for identity politics really shows how deep her understanding of the voting public is. Oh, Brian says,
that's
"While I agree
nice.
With all the comments on who is gaining traction or not, I was struck by the fact that they look like an outstanding group of potential cabinet secretaries."
True.
And Charles says, "Google SERPs for Matt's." Oh, okay. Google search maps before the debate showed Warren the most searched name by state. After the debate, Tulsi Gabbard was the most searched name.
The first debate, yeah.
She was another one.
By state? Yeah.
Bye-bye okay. Now.
All right. Well, there we go for the letters and...
Oh, God.
Let's talk, while we're talking politics and presidential politics, let's talk about Hunter Biden. All right. So, major piece in The New Yorker magazine.
Right.
I'm going to, my summation will be quick, and from the Washington Post coverage of the article in The New Yorker. But Hunter Biden, son of 2020 presidential hopeful Joe Biden, shared gritty and personal details of his history of addiction with The New Yorker, saying he wanted to preempt publication of piecemeal stories that would paint his father poorly. Though weeks of conversations became increasingly open, Hunter became increasingly open about his setbacks, aware that many of the stories that he told, and this is New Yorker writer Adam Entos?
I don't know him.
E-N-T-O-U-S, Entos,
yeah.
Wrote
right.
That through weeks of conversations, Hunter became increasingly open that his setbacks, aware that many of the stories that he told me would otherwise emerge, likely in a distorted form, in Breitbart or on Hannity. 49-year-old Hunter candidly admitted that his struggle with alcohol dated back to high school, cigarettes and cocaine entered the picture while he was studying at Georgetown. Everyone faces pain, Hunter said. Everyone faces trauma. There's addiction in every family. I was in that darkness. I was in that tunnel. It's a never-ending tunnel. You don't get rid of it. You figure out how to deal with it. Over the 15 years, Hunter has checked into and out of rehabilitation centers. The report detailed at least 5 stays at inpatient and outpatient programs. And Joe Biden has stood by his son throughout, notwithstanding the stigma or possible political fallout. Rosemary, you brought up Hunter Biden last week.
A long time. The interest in this story is difficult for the media. You know, what's personal and what's private, and it became in our divided community, our divided country, a point among conservatives that why aren't you talking about Hunter Biden? Because they certainly were, and he's acknowledging that this is being picked up by Breitbart and all the conservative press and being used against him. It also, though, doesn't address, it's not just addiction, which unfortunately any parent knows there, but for the grace of God, go I. But mm-hmm. he was involved in Ukrainian politics and the whole messiness scandal with the going out with the widow of the other brother.
Hunter Biden's
Bo,
business
right.
dealings, his divorce, and his relationship with Bo's wife, Hallie.
Yeah,
and his brand new wife from a couple weeks ago.
There you go. He meets another woman and then, you know, they're married right away. That's scandalous behavior, and it should be talked about and aired, I think, by the media, because Biden is, even now, the leading candidate to go against Trump.
But we
so
asked,
how should it punish, Rosemary,
exactly.
for whatever it's worth, how should it punish or relate to Joe Biden, a grown son who, as you have just said, faces what every parent knows could happen in a family and does happen all over.
Yeah,
times.
And they have a really unique history, of course, because Biden's wife and daughter were tragically killed when Hunter was a child. And he was badly hurt himself in that. So there's lots of trauma in that family to explain it. I think this has to do more with us than with the Biden family, that we hide things. And why do we? What if Biden had used what happened, what is happening still with his son as a way to talk to people about addiction, about a traumatic experience?
But if he makes that decision, that's one thing. But, I mean, the business dealings, fine. I mean, the business dealings are one thing, and that's political. The personal stuff, you know, there by the grace of God goes all of us.
Right.
And is it really, does it really need to be fodder for a presidential campaign?
It will be, right?
Yes, yeah. But should it be? The answer is no.
I think it's going to be more fodder for the tabloids. I doubt other candidates will bring up this stuff. And I do think that Hunter Biden's issues, everybody has problems with people in their own families. And Hunter Biden is Joe Biden's least of his worries right now. The fact that Joe Biden could barely get through sentences during that debate. Right. He never really had a fastball, and whatever fastball that he had is now gone. And you compare him to Bernie Sanders, who's about his age. Bernie Sanders seemed right there. He had not missed a step from 4 years ago. And
Biden's numbers are going down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because he was yelling and screaming like an old man. He was kidding. It's presentation.
What do you mean?
I know.
Yeah. That was cute. That was very cute, Alan.
All right. Let me see. I think we did all the letters. Did we get to all the letters? Yes, we got to all the letters. So that's good.
As my late mother used to say about the Biden thing, Hunter, they're all doing it now. The question is, how many people are all doing it now? Who is the first to say it couldn't happen to me?
To me, the issue is press criticism. And, Alan, we do this on the media. How should the media be covering presidential elections? And this is an issue. You've got a relative who is an adult on his own feet, and there's scandalous behavior. Do you cover it or not? What's proper? What's not? I don't have pat answers for that.
We don't do what's proper. We do. Look, you know better than any of us does that there's an editor sitting in one of the four major television channels or in one of the newspapers holding their finger up in the air to see which way the wind is blowing and saying, what will fascinate Americans more?
Well, that's true. But what if we were to sit down and say, okay, this is what we're going to do from now on? In other words, you say we're going to do the right thing, but we got to figure out what the right thing is. And in this case, by not covering it, by saying that's his personal business, has nothing to do with Joe Biden, we gave power, the liberal press gave power to conservatives and said, see, you're
what
covering
about the non-liberal?
It up. You're covering
what about
it
the-
up.
What about the non-liberal press? What about the New York POST?
I'm sorry. We're out of time. I apologize. We have to go.
Sure.
But my thanks to everybody.
Is that like shut up?
Well, I'm sorry. I got the little thing in my ear. Like, we have to go because I only have 10 seconds. Thank you all very much. Goodbye.